Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell, Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures down 25 cents. NASDAQ futures up 9, so not much going on here this morning. CPI number coming out tomorrow. The big number everybody's waiting for. Do we have Mr. Carl Denninger? Is he out of jail?
Yeah,
I'm just reading this article about you here.
Jail?
Yeah. Hong Kong seizes $10 million worth of gold disguised as machine parts in record smuggling book. A private plane leased to Carl Denninger was on its way to Japan. They melted the gold down and they made it into screws and stuff looking like machine parts. Do you believe that? That is clever.
Well, that's clever.
How the hell do you get caught doing something like that?
Somebody figures out that you did it. I mean, you know, what's really secret these days, right? I mean, if you think about it. And then, I mean, once they know you've done it, then all they need to do is find a way to search and find it, and, well, you're done.
How much is 146 kilogram?
It's 2.2 kilos to a pound.
All right, so it's a... It's
454 grams.
60 pounds of gold.
454 grams. Yeah. So that's not a huge amount, but it's
$10 million worth. 10.7. Not the new prices.
Yeah. It's worth a fair bit of money. As an amusement side of that, you ever seen the movie Sisu?
No, I've heard of it.
The World War II time frame, you know, the Russians and the Nazis had a bad time in Scandinavia. Okay, during they had several people who were very uninterested in going quietly, and apparently one of them liked to kill Russians and was very good at it. Got about 300 of them, and then the Nazis came through there and they thought they'd screw with him. He decided he was going to start prospecting, and he had found a nice little cache of gold, and they failed. Well, of course. Wow. You know, who knows how much was, his dramatic license. Probably plenty of it, but it was rather amusing to the film. And it all turned on him. He just refused to die and refused to give his gold up.
God. Well, there's an article here by a guy named Dylan Butts, and they got pictures of all this stuff. I don't know how they found these guys. According to the government statement, 156 kilograms of gold have been molded and camouflaged as part of two air compressors in the cargo of the airplane parked in the city. They got all these screws, but if you look at them real close, they tried to cover them with, you know, chromium or something, but you can see the gold shining through. So they didn't put enough external stuff on there to camouflage the gold. Well, you know, people are much cleverer than me. I'm jealous, Carl. What can I say?
Well, you know, you gotta give people some credit for things like this. I'm rather disappointed, actually. You know, I mean, I'm actually still traveling. Went to find a place where I could go to get some photographs of that nice little occlusion.
Oh, cool, yesterday.
Yeah, and I ended up in Indiana, and we thought we were going to get too much haze and stuff like that for it to be, you know, the kind of event it was in 2017. I got some photographs of the 2017 one, and it was absolutely fantastic. Well, you know, God saw fit to part the ways, if you will, and we saw the totality. It was absolutely stunning.
We were like 85% here. Of it. But a couple guys had bought the crummy little glasses, and he looked at those for a second. And
oh, yeah.
Like, oh, no, you couldn't do that. They were, I mean,
Well, no. With those on, you actually can look at it for as long as you'd like. They're, you know, at least as long as you didn't get fake Chinese ones, in which case you no longer have eyes. But I have solar filters, so I can actually shoot directly at the sun.
Okay.
Provided I have it on my lens that I'm using to, you know, to do that with. But during the totality, you take it off. And we had a bunch of little kids in the neighborhood at a friend's place, and so I kept having to warn them that, I've got a timer running, guys. When this thing beeps, you stop looking at it. Because during the totality, you look at it without a filter. And just, you know, with your regular eyes, it's perfectly fine. You just must not be when it ends, because you're getting a warning. And, you better have those glasses on when that comes, because if you don't, well.
So, you know, yeah. I was doing a little... I don't know why. I'm trying to make another commercial, right, for the show. And I went back and did some research. I think I told you when we first started PTI and we were doing seminars and stuff, we met this interesting character from Phoenix. And, he originally was from Columbus, Indiana. And we became good friends. He was a character. He was a navigator on a B-24, I think, in World War II, got shot down, was prisoner of war. Tough old bird, but he's from Columbus, Indiana. Became a broker, like in 1953, with Merrill Lynch or somebody in Columbus, Indiana, of all places. Ended up, kids took they did a summer 2-week deal up at the Bay of the Islands in Lake Huron. I don't know if you know where that is. And he ended up buying like 3 islands up there. And then all of a sudden the Crown, because the Queen was still involved back in those days, said you can't sell any islands anymore. So it was him. It's like the guy who owned Canadian National. Those are the people that own the islands, right? And they were... Anyway, we'll keep this short because it's not really a part of the story, but Audrey and I get invited up there. And I think I was the only Democrat ever in his place, right? So we went up there, and it's the most incredible thing I've ever seen. I mean, basically you had to bring the dirt out for the septic tank, you know. These are just rock islands with some scrub trees on them. Anyway, he also was a pretty good trader until he got kind of goofy when he got older. But he traded futures. And there were, back in those days, remember Joe Granville, that name? He actually had a technical system, which I don't even know if you could find anymore. It was him, and then there were like 4 systems, that technical systems. But I think there were what's the one with the candlesticks was one of them, and I used to know this stuff when I was on the floor because guys hit all this. Anyway, he got a machine, I think it was called Future Source back in the day, where you could have, they would chart all this stuff for it. Now, and that machine still is way better than anything you see today, because you can easily put one chart on top of another chart, which is pretty hard to do on some of the stuff you see now. I mean, but he would put all 4 of these technical things on 4 different screens, and when they all matched up, he would make a trade, and he put $250,000, which in 19, whatever the hell it was, a lot of money, in an account. At the end of the year, he basically worked his fanny off, and at the end of the year, he's break even. And he goes, you know, something's wrong here. I'm always right. Not always, but pretty much always right, but I'm always early. I always get stopped out. So he also was kind of a mathematician, being a navigator. So he started doing some regression analysis on all the different futures stuff, you know, pork bellies, corn, wheat, you name it. And he found that every one of them had a different lag time from when they showed up with the 4, you know, the 4 technical things all said, this one's a buy, this one's a sell. There was a different lag time. It went from like a week to a month to 3 weeks. And he started using the lag time, and all of a sudden he was pretty much cooking booty, right? And
I think you've told us one.
Right, but here's what I found as I started digging back into 1980 and 1981, 82 when I started, and how the market, you know, the interest rates were one place, and I thought that the market would start going up, because it looked to me like interest rates were only going to start coming down. And you know, and I had hardly anything in my account when I started, so I couldn't really be all that long, but I was like a year early, all right? So, right. I'd kind of forgotten all about that. So yesterday I started digging back into those years, and I looked at the market. Well, in January 1969, the S&P was 103, okay? In July of 1982, it was 107. So let's just say that the buy and hold theory did not work for that 13 years too well. We actually got to 118 in December of 72, back down to 69 in November of 74, up to 140 in 1980. But here's the thing that's weird, Colin, and I'm trying to make a commercial out of this, but I can't say it's something you should trade on, but that's why I want your opinion. But the funny part was in 1981, okay, your interest rates, CD rates, is what you could go to the bank and give them to them, and it was roughly 16%, 15.91 in 1981. And it was already down to 12.27 by August of 82.
Right.
So it actually had made a damn near a 4-point move. In the market, however, in July of 82 was 107, and in January of 81 it was 129. So actually, the market kept going down the whole time the rates were going down, because and I remember, you know, just the Joe Granvilles of the world, his newsletter every morning was sell all stocks, sell all stocks. You couldn't. I mean, the market was such that if IBM was trading, say, 150, it'd be 10,000 shares, 150 and an eighth, 400 shares, 150, 300 shares, 149 and 7/8. The market was so heavy you couldn't even. But nothing changed, even though it was obvious for, you know, a year or so, 18 months probably, maybe even a little more, that the rates were going down and that the tone had changed. And still you couldn't get anybody to buy anything. And now today, it's almost the same thing, where the rates have gone from virtually zero to five in about an 18-month, two-year period, and the market's actually up. Because maybe it's old habits day hard, maybe it's different this time or whatever, but I couldn't believe the similarity on the mirror image. I mean, unless I went back and looked at this, I would never have guessed that rates were already down 4% before the rally started over like an 18-month period. And the handwriting was absolutely on the wall. And yet, you know, nobody did anything until August 82 for some reason. You comment on that, because I'm just saying, I just throw it out there, but it's weird. Is that sort of the same timing thing that my buddy CW used to find, or what is it?
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, if you look at what's going on now, it is screamingly obvious that either Congress is going to have to take $2 trillion out of federal spending. Okay. Rates are going to actually have to go higher than they are now. Not 18%, but short end is going to be somewhere around 8, and the longer end of the curve is going to be it's going to be into double digits, you know, 10, 11.
I was going to guess 6 and 10. You're worse than me.
Well, I mean, that's about where they have to be to balance things as they stand right now. And all of the commercial level paper that has been taken out over the last 10, 15 years is going to roll into that environment. Okay. Is. I mean, that's a fact. Commercial entities don't pay debt off, they roll it over. They can't pay it off. They don't have the cash.
Not if you're buying stock back.
Well, not after you. But it doesn't matter what you did with the money.
When, yeah.
You know, if you borrowed $100 million, and the term comes due, you don't have $100 million. The only alternative you have is to roll it into another note, whatever the.
Well, if you actually bought planes for it, it might be okay. If you bought the United stock back, it might not be okay.
Well, it's not okay if you don't have $100 million.
Right.
Okay. I mean, if you don't have the principal, it doesn't make any difference what you did with the money. Okay. It makes absolutely no difference, because the only other alternative, I mean, you have two alternatives. One is roll it and pay the whatever the higher carrying cost is, and the second one is you're bankrupt and they come and they seize everything. Sorry, those are the two possibilities. And so You know, that's the world we live in. And right now, the asset markets, whether it be houses or whatever have you, all think that there is a plan C. There is a third possibility. No, there's not. And oh, by the way, you have every company out there that is in a way that they can try to arbitrage this is arbitraging it. So, I mean, if you're seeing crazy increases in property casualty and auto insurance, and everybody I know that I've talked to about it is, okay, I'm getting my, you know, I moved in right around the 1st of May, so now I've got all the renewal offers, right? Because, you know, everything kind of like stacks at the same time when you do that. Okay, fine. I'm seeing 20% increases across the board, and I have zero claims history over more than two decades. Okay, so I mean, there is zero reason for any of these guys to be, you know, to say, well, you know, this guy, he got in a car wreck, therefore, all right, well, guess what? I didn't get in a car wreck. I didn't have, you know, damage to my home or whatever have you. And, you know, anybody that's had any kind of claims experience is getting non-renewed. So, you know, then you're in the high-risk pool because now you've had a cancellation. All right, so now, you know, now you get uprated, which you're not, you know, you're not preferred risk anymore. And that's, and oh, by the way, if you want to know where they're getting some of this from, these guys are the same guys that are out there buying up all the residential housing and turning it in rentals. It's the Blackstones of the world.
Well, but the auditor was on yesterday saying that the rentals are no higher than if you can get a mortgage. In some places.
Well, yeah, but this is, well, in a lot of places. But yeah. See, this is the thing, is that everybody that can find some way to try to arbitrage this game is doing it, okay? They don't care about the fact that, you know, the anti-collusion laws are supposed to prohibit this kind of behavior, but, of course, nobody enforces those. And after, you know, a few decades of everybody doing it to you up your back door in health insurance, you know, healthcare and the collusion there, and virtually everywhere else, hey, you know, if these guys can get away with it, well, why can't we do it with your house?
Right, well, I'm going to push back just a hair. You're never going to get me to defend any of the insurance companies. Okay, but I think, just because I'm not any closer to this than you are, because you seem to see everything that's going on around you. I think the insurance companies, to a certain extent, and the reason why the main reason why the prices are going up so much is I think they are victims, just as you and I are, to the government telling them that inflation rates are 18% over the last 5 years, and I'm going to say that in car repair and home repair, they're minimum 40. I mean, Audrey's area had a hailstorm, okay, a while back, and there was actually a guy, and he was legit. I mean, he was a person who goes around and looks for damage on people's roofs. And now, of course, if there isn't any, he can't find any. And there was an area he knew there was a hailstorm, and he ended up with, I'm going to say, 25 houses that took him a year or two to work its way through insurance companies and said, look, the damage on these roofs, that you don't notice it from the bottom that much, but when he went up there, you know, he was
right
scribbling stuff out on the copper. There they are. There's not these dents and everything. And Carl, the average, these things are $75,000 and $90,000 for a roof, for God's sake. And God help you if your car has a dent. You can't get into a auto parts.
Oh no, button. I'm not arguing with that. Okay, I mean, I'm a very good friend of mine. He's an auto body guy. Okay, and he's really good at it.
He's got to be fat and happy.
Well, he's former Marine, and
you're kind of coming in and out. You might have to move in the room somewhere.
When the hits are bad, okay, you would not believe the, you know, how ugly that gets, right, into the physicality of that kind of work. So he's able now to catch us from the...
Well, but it's also, I mean, when you see it, you know, in the cost of labor, we're hearing every other word out of you, so until you get cleaned up, I'll talk a little bit. When you see the cost of labor, it's pretty interesting when you see somebody who's a welder or a machinist or For God's sake, whatever it is you do, and you're making $30-$40 an hour as even an auto parts worker, and all of a sudden the auto body guy is charging you $150 an hour. You wonder, wait a minute, how does that work? I mean, how is he any more skilled than I am, and yet they're charging three times as much? I mean, it's a... Are you doing any better there?
I think so.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
I'm saying those guys are amazingly expensive.
Well, yeah, I mean, and part of the problem, a big part of the problem, is that go ahead and get hit and have, you know, get tapped in a parking lot, okay? And have a taillight busted, all right? That taillight's $1,000.
Well, you got to take the whole bumper off, probably, to replace it.
Oh, no, it's not. It's not that. The part, a taillight lens, is $1,000. It's integrated LEDs, and by the way, that's what they charge.
Well, I mean, I...
Lose a headlight, Chief, and it's $2,000.
Well, my new pickup truck, I just bought some new headlights, and they were $80, so... But those are
not anymore.
Those are the ones you can still, you know, the plastic housing just goes right in the fender. Now at Audrey's.
Well, I understand. Yeah. No. Now get one though that has the new ones with the integrated LEDs. They're $2,000 a piece.
Well, Audrey's was whatever to take the whole front bumper off to replace the stuff, and come in through the sidewall and stuff.
You know what? The guys that are good at that, it takes them about 15 minutes. I can get the front bumper cover off my Mazda in about 20. And the guys that actually know what they're doing can do it in 10.
Well,
they don't have to look.
I think what we're both saying is the fiasco of the last 5 years is still working its way through the system. There's a guy, he's a listener to the show.
Oh, yeah.
So I hear from him all the time. From Indiana. He probably was right where he was. He's from Indianapolis. He writes me every week or so. And he some girl whacks into his Ford pick-me-up, right? And he goes, not only, I think he was, they had to get him, was, you know, he said it was... couple thousand in damage. It wasn't, you know, wasn't like wrecked or anything. I think it was when he was 8 weeks with a loaner.
Right. Oh no, I had a friend of mine that hit a deer with a pretty much brand new Ram. Okay. There was, you know, there was fur sticking out of the bumper, so it was, you know, I mean, it wasn't like he hit something else and then, you know, tried to claim it was a deer. And the thing is, He had the Mazda loaner that they gave him for a month, and the problem was that's how long it took for them to get the parts.
Yeah, yeah, that's the same thing with this guy, and it was a Ford.
Yeah, and I mean, and he was just like, I mean, he was bent because he really likes his truck, okay, but it was nearly brand new, so...
That's the problem. If it was an older one, he probably could have got the parts in a couple of days.
Yeah, so it's like, well, you know, it is what it is, but this is, and the same thing... some of this stuff is deliberate, by design screwings. One of the things that they've done, and this is just in the last few years, is that you can't buy, in a residential application, a water heater, a tank style water heater of more than 50 gallon capacity.
Why?
Because the government said they're illegal to make. They use too much energy.
What they used to call it was over 50 gallon. It was called a boiler, right? Was 75.
Oh, no. Oh, no. There were, and I have, 80-gallon home tanks, okay? Which if you have more than, I mean, for me, if I'm, you know, living by yourself, 50 gallons is more than enough. But if you've got a house full of kids, not so much, right?
Right.
While I'll take a shower. So the thing is that now your only alternatives, if you want something larger than that, is one of the hybrid ones that is $3,000. Okay, or tankless, which if you are not set up for it, is god awful expensive because you got to run the vent and the, you know, the gas line for it and everything else. And oh, by the way, when they break, they're $2,500 too. And so, you know, I mean, the let's go down to Home Depot, $400, new hot water tank, no big deal, it's all done. That's done if you have, you know, if you do not want the smaller, nicer, whatever. And oh, by the way, now your shower's cold because your kid took one. You know,
well, we'll redesign it on Friday because I find a way where I can put two of them in there. That would be me, but
you can do that provided you have the power for it.
Right.
What if you don't?
Well, we'll kick this around on Friday, bud. What do you think of the number tomorrow, real quick? Because we got to go.
I think it's going to come in considerably warmer. Just look at gasoline, and that ramp has been there in energy for the last, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. So it had to cross a sample week this time. I can't see how it doesn't show up.
Well, okay, we'll talk about it on Friday. SP Views up 4, Nancy Views up 31. Be right back, Mr. Joel O'Connor.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello, and welcome back to Jack. Time out. Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures up 3. NASDAQ Futures up 26. Dow Futures up 2. Nothing in the Dow I see is moving too crazy. American Express down 259. Goldman Sachs down 213. So not much. Most of the rest of them are up a little bit, so it's probably more green than red. Over in Europe, we've got the CPI number coming tomorrow, so today being a snoozer probably is not unexpected. DAX down 118.6%, kind of what they were up yesterday. FTSE up 10.1. Heck around down 34.4, so not sure why they're down, but they are. We're in Asia. Nikkei is up 426. That's over 1%. 39,773. Again, the Japan Central Bank's been pushing money into the system. Hang Seng up 95.6%. 16,828. And Shanghai up a whole point, but still over 3,304.8. Yesterday, Dow was down 11. S&P down 2. NASDAQ unchanged, like I said, a snoozer. Bonds down 3 basis points, 4.39. The Bund down 4 basis points, 2.40. Japan unchanged at 0.79. We've got oil up a dime, 86.53. It's been quiet the last few days, but still it's firmly locked in this mid-80s number, which is a long way from the high 70s it was for quite a while. Brent up 16 cents, 90.54. Natural gas up 4 cents, 188. RBOB unchanged, 275. Gold up 21.90, another record high, 23.72. Silver up 27 cents, 28. Wow, 28.08. That's incredible for silver. We're long both of those. Yippee! Copper up 1%, one penny, 4.28. And we have Bitcoin down 9.95, but still over 70,000, 77.85. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Morning, everyone. 6:35 a.m. here in Chicago. 56 degrees right now. Cool and clouds. High of 61 today. Phoenix, 53 degrees. Mostly sunny. High of 85. Traffic. Inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 15 minutes. Edens from Lake Cook, 34 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 32 minutes. The Ryan from 95th is 20 minutes. And the Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 20 minutes. Otherwise, sports. We got MLB. The White Sox lose at the Guardians. That was 0-4. Diamondbacks lose at Rockies. That was 5-7. Cubs lose at Padres. That was 8-9.
They were up 8-0.
Yeah. And now...
How about that bullpen?
Tonight, the Bulls play at home versus the Knicks. That's at 7. The Clippers play the Suns at 9. And yesterday, the NCAA tournament finished. UConn won its second in a row, back-to-back champions, 75-60 against Purdue. And that's all I got, Chief.
Two players against eight. Hard to do. We have Joel?
Yeah, good morning.
Joel, how are you, buddy?
I won my pool.
You won the Warren Buffett's million-dollar pool?
No. Nope, I won. I can't disclose his names. 288-person pool.
Wow.
Yep.
I assume you had UConn all the way.
Yeah, I had UConn-Purdue final. And the only reason I won, and it was purely dumb luck, is I put Bama in the Final Four.
Really?
So, yep. And, you know, I don't think many people had Bama and NC State. Maybe they had one or both. But I happen to just, like, dumb luck. Just, that looks well. I kind of like the Bama coach. I like Nate Oates. He has some Michigan roots. He coached at Romulus High School here, just outside of my area. So I've been following him for a while. Also, my nephew's friend is the graduate student manager. So how's that for some sophisticated analysis?
Well, you know, it's as good as any. The middle of the year, one of the announcers said he thought there were 15 teams that could win, but this UConn is really balanced and really deep. It's pretty hard to, I mean, you got to win all those games in a row, which is really hard to do, but if ever there was a team, you know, since the UCLA days, that you'd say if we started all over, they'd win again, I'd say it was these guys.
Yeah. I mean, they're so good. They are so well coached. It's just unbelievable. I mean, and they send players to the pros. I was just watching it, and I was just, they're just good. They're just well coached. They're just the class. Kind of reminded me, unfortunately, of 2018 when my good old Michigan team, I went down to San Antonio to play Villanova, and it was just like, okay, these guys are these guys, and these guys are better. So, well, it's we'll see. We'll see how many. I don't know how many guys they have graduating or whatnot. I'm excited about Michigan's new coach Dusty May coming in from FAU, and I was thinking about you, Chief. Man, they're just going to be working that transfer portal.
Oh yeah,
just like professional sports. You bring the players in. Who cares about education? Who cares about degrees? You know, it's a professional game now, and it's been heading that way for a while.
I just wonder how it's all going to shake out, because it's because I keep hearing people saying, why don't the schools are gonna, even coaches, why don't the schools just pay people? They don't want any part of that. They don't want to be the employers. And how is it that the money they're getting now, that the people are being paid by sponsors, alumni, and all kinds of other people? I don't think they want any part of that on their budget.
I'll get you some more information, but I've been working with a firm called Nilly, and they're basically, you know, trying to, you know, help students monetize themselves coming out of high school. I mean, come on, Chief, we've been talking about this for years and years and years. These universities have been making billions of dollars. The networks have been making billions of dollars.
Not all. I mean, I'm going to say it's a small group.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think it's still. What are you talking about? When the Mac's on a Wednesday night game or something? You don't think ESPN is filtering and, you know, getting some of that money to the schools? And you know what I think also? I mean, you know, I, of course, being in the markets and observing sports for a long time, I think this wagering eventually is going to bite it in its butt. Did you see about that center? From Toronto, that was actually like pulling himself out of games.
Yeah, we talked about him last week twice. He had a game in January and a game in March. And, you know, it was interesting to me, John, if you read the part about the first game, the gambling was a little heavy. So the gambling places all kind of noticed it.
Yeah.
When it happened in March, they were right on it. They were right on it. And then, of course, some doofus says, geez, we need federal regulation. Gamblers are way better regulation than the Fed is ever going to be.
You know what they have better than federal regulation? They have algorithms and computers is what they have.
Well, what
and
is...
And, you know?
But this is not new.
No,
you know, I used to go to Vegas a lot when I was young, right? And I'm going to say that if you'd see Harvard, Yale on the board at Caesars, and I'm going to say if I walked up there with 50 grand and handed it to the guy and said, by the way, I want Harvard, when nobody gives a behind about the Harvard-Yale game, really, then the people in the stands aren't even there, I'm telling you, it's going right off the board. They're going to say, wait, we're not taking that bet. They have such an idea that if Joel Ankonen is playing for the Bulls tonight, and he's a starter, but he's not Michael Jordan, but he's a starter, and all of a sudden they've got, you know, four assists, 10 points and 4 rebounds, which is your average, and all of a sudden $40,000 comes down on the under. I mean, these guys are not that stupid, I don't think.
Well, I mean, I could just give you an example going back to horse racing. I mean, it's called, you know, the late money, you know. And now, you know, you be at the track. A lot of times I wait. Well, don't go to the tracks. There's not that many open around here anymore. But you go, you wait. Horse is 5-6 to 1. All of a sudden, he drops a 2-3 to 1. That means that's some late money coming in. And the late money's, you know, a lot of times is the smart money. I can remember one time when you know, my dad sent me up to the track to make a pretty good size wager on a horse, and I went up there. I was in line, prepared to do it, and the guy in front of me threw like, and this is a long time ago, he threw like $3,000 down on a different horse. And I'm like, man, this guy knows more than my dad. And I still made the bet, but I scaled it back. And that other horse ended up winning. So, you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know. It's not when you bet. It's not how you bet, it's when you bet. And that's all I got for you today, Chief. I'm out next week. I'll send you an email. Should I bring in my buddy AB tomorrow, the producer of my show? He's pretty good with stocks and jocks.
If he wants to be on next week, sure.
Okay, I'll send you an email out for next week. Let's go. Go Blue. Go Tigers. They're going back to being the Motor City Kitties. They started out hot, and now they just lost 3 in a row. 2 to the A's, 2-1 to the Pirates. So.
Well, they're beating up, but you know, wins against the White Sox don't count.
Exactly. That's exactly what I said. Yep. Okay, we'll talk soon, guys.
SP Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures up 34. Great. You want to go right to Kenny, or you want to go to break?
Let's go to break.
All right, we'll go to a quick break. We'll be right back with Kenny Pulcheri.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call, 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Blown up by Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Quick Pappas on the board. SP Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures up 34, so we're marching a little bit to the upside here. And a day before the CPI numbers, maybe a snoozer of a day here, but maybe not. Do we have Mr. Kenny? How are you, Kenny? I think we do have you.
We do have me, and I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I was doing some research, which I should never do, and I'll run this by you. And as I got to the conclusion here, not the conclusion, just looking at the numbers, I got this really eerie feeling in the, you know, how the hair kind of comes up on the back of your neck. As you know, I started right about when the rally started. Well, actually, I started about 18 months before the rally in August of 82.
Yeah.
And I have not looked at these numbers, Kenny, in, for God's sake, 25 years. I started looking at them yesterday. I found a couple of sites where I could go back and look at this stuff. And I was looking at the S&P numbers and how when the bull market sort of started, well, actually ended in 68, we started putting money into the system. Well, the 69, the S&P was like 103, right? It made it to 118 in 1972. Actually made it to 140 in 1980. 1974 was like the low at under 70, which we're talking about something that's 5,000 now. Anyway, but the thing that came flying out at me was in January of 1981, it was 129.50. And in July of 82, when the rally started, it was down to 107.
Right.
Okay, but now the weird part was, Kenny, this is the part that I never put two and two together like this, even though I lived through it. In 1981, the CD rate was almost 16. And by August of 82, it was down to almost 12.
So the CD rate, yeah.
So we had actually moved almost 4 points down, and yet the market for so many years was you can't get in that. You don't want to be in the market. You just want to put the habit of not being in the market. I mean, if I could have seen a guy like Kenny in July of 1982, hanging at some garden party, drinking some wine with your pinky in the air, if you were to say, I'm cashing in my CDs, I'm going to try and find my mutual fund guy, he's probably painting houses, and I'm going to put all my money in the market. Kenny, you'd have been banned, you'd have been shunned, you'd have been cut off from the bar, even though it was already 18 months that the tone was changing.
Right.
And now today's world, we're 2 years away from the interest rates being zero, and now they're 5.5. And the market's higher. Does that sound weirdly familiar?
Well, it does sound weirdly familiar. But look, remember the remember what happened to the Dow during that time too, right? It had been trading in early 1981. It was trading at about 1,000. By the summer of 1982, it was trading at 792.
Yeah,
on the day in August when the Fed came out and made that surprise announcement about cutting the Fed fund rates. Remember. They cut them 10% on that day, right? In August 1982, when it was 21%, they cut them by 10%, which was 2 full percentage points. They cut them to 19%, but they drew the line in the sand that they were cutting rates. They were going to bring rates to normal, and that was the explosion and the birth of the greatest bull market this country and the world has ever known, right? When the Dow was trading at 792, down from 1,000, and has since gone to now nearly 39,000, right?
Kenny, that's exactly what I remember because I was on the trading floor when it happened.
Yeah, and I was on the New York the day it happened.
Do you remember the stock? You remember the stock that led us out of the wilderness?
I'm going to say there were a bunch of them, but what are you going to say, GE?
No, the first one was Eastman Kodak by far.
Oh, Eastman Kodak, which doesn't exist anymore.
It doesn't exist. All of a sudden, it got crazy in that pit, and people started buying it, and the fills weren't theirs, and people were screaming, what do you mean it's not my fill?
on the floor of the New York, because the orders were, on the Monday, the orders were, buy 1,000 of this or sell 1,000 of that. On the Tuesday, when the Fed came out, suddenly it was buy 150,000 Coke, buy 150,000 GE, buy 200,000 IBM, like orders you had never seen before, right? In that size and that quantity all at once. It was a crazy day. I mean, as I'm sitting here talking to you about it now, I can feel the sweat rolling down my back. Yeah. I was 19 years old and the phones just didn't stop ringing. It was one of the most amazing days in my career, right? That I started in 1980, but it was the summer 1982 when that happened.
I mean, it was all doom and gloom. That's why I ran these numbers today by you, because I remember the day, and I remember the Fed doing the stuff. I do not recall the CD rate already being down 4%. The Fed was actually very late.
Yeah.
I got a quick story about that. There was a guy in the Kodak crowd. He was like the main market maker. There were probably 10 people, but he was the main guy. His name was Richie Castle. Yeah. And all of a sudden, every broker in the world is flying to that pit to make a trade.
Yeah,
and he couldn't write the stuff down fast enough. So he said, screw it, and just threw his cards on the floor. and just did the trades. I'll buy 100, I'll sell 100. People came in, and he let everybody come into him the next morning.
Yeah.
Now, but you know, if you're a trader, you don't remember every single stinking trade, but you sort of, you remember anyone that's a little odd.
Yeah.
I mean, you know that. Yeah. And the next morning, he had, like, I don't know how many pages out trades he had. He went through them all, and not one person tried to stick him. He took all the trades.
Right.
Well, can you imagine that today?
No.
The people that have that much honor where you wouldn't stick anybody even knew he wasn't writing stuff down?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I think, you know, in March of 1980, six-month CD rates were still nearly 18%.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. By 82, they were already down.
Yeah, in 1982, because I'm just looking at it right now, what were the rates in the summer of 82? They were down at 12.5%.
Yep.
I don't remember that. But I'll tell you why I don't remember it also, because I was 19 years old. I didn't have any money. So I didn't have money in CDs. I didn't have any money in the market. I just had no money. I was a kid in college.
Well,
right?
I was a little older.
I don't remember that. Yeah, I don't remember that because I wasn't in that market, right?
Well, I know I was working at Pullman before I came to the floor, and I remember, yeah. You know, my mother would go from bank to bank to get the different ones. And one of the ladies used to be on the show that had the untimely accident this year. The highest she got with Continental Bank was 16.25 or something.
Yeah, yeah, for a 6 month or a 12 month.
I think it was a six. I might have been a 12. If she was alive, I could ask her. But
But
I mean, I'm really stunned that these rates had dropped so much, because for regular people. They didn't make the move from the rates back to the market. I mean, I remember every morning coming in and Joe Granville, his newsletter coming out and said the top of it in big letters was sell all stocks.
Right.
I mean, and it wasn't really to, but it's surprising how long it took before it kind of hit everybody. Because I remember being sort of long, but you know, I had 10 grand in my account. Okay? I said, what am I going to do? I was going to be Mr. Long or anything. And I was trading three stocks. Plus, there were no indexes. There was no OEX, I mean, there was only a few stocks that you could buy with the idea that if we went up, they'd go with it.
Right. And no ETFs, none of that.
No,
stuff.
None of that stuff.
You know, those mutual funds or the individual names.
Yeah. So I mean, a trader wasn't going to put his money in a mutual fund. So
right. Correct.
I mean, I'm just. It's so eerie that here we are. I mean, you listen to. I mean, I listen once in a while. You on Fox, but I'm listening to CNBC mostly. I don't know why, but all they do is talk about all day, like nothing. Like wait till the Fed has his first rate cut. Okay, but but the market has been up the entire time they've been raising them. Same thing as in 81. Wait a minute.
But you know, they've been raising them in anticipation of this cut coming. I think the narrative, you know, first of all, you and I discussed it. The whole idea that we were going to get 5 or 6 or 7 rate cuts in 24 was illogical to begin with. Okay, so that's number one. But the fact that they're still talking about these potential rate cuts coming in June and July, to me, is still illogical because the data doesn't reflect it at the moment, right?
Right.
There's nothing that says they need to cut rates. 5.25% rates, and we're kissing new highs, is not killing the market. It's not killing the economy. It's not destroying jobs, right? Unemployment is still 3.8%, historically low. And so I'm still confused on that narrative that still says we're getting, you know, 1 or 2 rate cuts in 2024. The only reason that I could imagine that they could, although it's going to be hard to justify, is because of the presidential election year and they're trying to support one party over the other, which, by the way, they should never do, right?
I think they always support the person who's in power if he's running again.
Well, you know, I guess we can go back and look at that to see whether or not. But you and I both know that they're not, 6 months prior to the election, they're not supposed to raise them or lower them.
Right.
Fear of being seen as partisan, right?
Actually, Bush 1 would disagree with that. He hated Greenspan because he thought he screwed him.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, you know, and I think Powell,
you know,
to not do anything, right? When they were talking about raising rates, and he was trying to jam them. No, but in fact, you know, where rates are at the moment is not making it difficult for stocks, for the market, for investors. You have a choice. You can put some money into 12-month CDs and get 5% or 5.25%. That's great. Offers stability to people that are nervous, but there's still opportunity in the market, in my opinion.
Well, two things. One is, I still think, and I, you know, I, as you know, I'm going to do my best. I'm going to vote for Kenny Pulcherry before I vote for either one of these two guys. But
am I a write-in candidate?
Well, if I write you in, you are. But I think one of the reasons why Trump lost, is that the Republican Congress refused to go ahead with his extra check he was sending people to during COVID, and this guy said, by the way, if I get in, you'll get your check.
Right. And they did.
And they did.
Not only did they get the check, they got a lot more than the check. And now he's once again trying to relieve another $30 billion in college loans, which, you know, the Supreme Court already said you can't do it. And he's like, well, screw the Supreme Court. I'm going to do it anyway.
Nope,
well,
nobody's
okay, wait a minute. There's a problem there.
Kenny, you're a man of the world. If you don't think for the last 25 years that nobody pays any attention to these things, the Supreme Court, as Carl rails about at least once a month, the Supreme Court said that the insurance companies can't collude twice, and nobody, they do it all the time. Nobody cares.
They do it all the time. Yeah. No, I hear you. So then, you know, I guess the question is, okay, the Supreme Court keeps telling you to do A, and everybody does B. So what are we doing with the Supreme Court?
Well, what are we doing with a population that lets? I mean, you think Trump cares about what the court says? I mean, Jesus.
No, I hear. No, well, he cares about it when it affects him directly. Yeah. Of course, he cares about it, right? But when they want to jam these policies down our throats, they don't care.
No.
What I don't understand is, okay, if they don't care, but where's the rest of us holding them to account, saying, whoa, 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 whoa? The Supreme Court said you cannot do this. Period. The end. So why are we not holding them to account? Why are we letting him forgive another $30 billion or whatever the number is? That's just going to go on your back and my back because it's going to raise a deficit. Janet Yellen's going to bring more supply, treasury supply to the market. Prices are going to go down. Yields are going to soar. Like Jamie Dimon said yesterday, he expects yields to rise. You know, bond yields to rise. Hey, I think he's 1,000% right.
These 10 years are going up every day.
Every day. And I think he's right. And you and I have been talking about it. I don't see how yields are not going to go up when she continues to have to bring massive supply to the bond market. There'll be plenty of people looking to buy our debt. That's not the issue. The issue is at what price will they be willing to buy our debt? And that's what's going to force the yields to soar. Because then they're going to say, listen, there's so much supply out there, just like you do in a stock. Suddenly there's five sellers. You're the only buyer. You're not going to stand there and get run over. You go, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm not going to pay $50 anymore. I'm going to pay whatever, $45, whatever the number is, right? The same thing happens in the bond market. There's so much supply. They'll just bid lower. Yields will go higher.
Well, the student loan stuff, and I'll just lob this one out there. We only got a minute or two. But this whole concept of the last 8 or 10 years where the Fed, and, you know, Jerome Powell's probably a pretty good guy. I mean, the whole concept that they lowered these interest rates, 90% of the population was left out of this lowering the interest rate part.
1,000%.
I mean, so I think that these student loan people, the government is letting people borrow money at zero, and yet they're charging these kids, people, whatever they were charging, 6, 6.5, 5.5.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't have a problem other than the fact the government's broke, of saying, hey, that rate should have been, you know, 4.5, and let's take care of everybody and give some kind of a rebate. And, oh, by the way, if you paid your loan off, you get a check too, not just if you didn't pay. Because now everybody who paid it off feels they're getting screwed. So I mean, there's a way to even that out. But I also don't like the idea that because our government, and I think you probably won't disagree, loves to come out with low hanging fruit on everybody, and they go after the most innocent of people. I mean, there's people that have co-signed a student loan for somebody who's friggin' dead that's 90 years old that they're going after.
Yeah.
And you can't do it and you can't get rid of it in bankruptcy. Well, that's crazy. Just because the two doctors 90 years ago screwed them, there's people that need to have that discharge just because they're never going to be able to pay it, Kenny. And, you know, I think the whole thing is a big screw up, to be honest with you. And the way he's going about it, I agree with you. But the fact is, something has to happen here. Yeah,
something has to happen.
Yeah,
I mean, something has to happen. And you know, where is the pushback from not only the people that took out the loans and paid them back, right? But the parents that took out loans with their kids to college and paid them back.
But
right?
I'm saying they should get something back as well because I think they. But then again, you're talking about a Fed that drove Amazon to get 2% money, and you and I are paying 25 on a credit card. So the whole country's screwed.
Yeah.
So I mean, where do you start?
Yeah, I don't know where you start, but you know, 30 usurious rates on revolving credit has always been an issue for me. I don't understand you know, I guess they get away with it because people are willing to pay it, right? People need the credit,
no,
so they're willing to pay it.
We got to go,
but it's usurious.
I'm going to say that 90% of the people that have credit cards never intend to carry a balance. All of a sudden, they have a medical something mm-hmm. happens, a car payment, and they got it.
Exactly, and then once you have it,
then
you know, then it gets more difficult, right? And so that's exactly right. And so, but I don't, you know, where's Elizabeth Warren on that? How are they letting, you know, revolving credit card? I get people are going to lend you money, so that's fine. They should get paid for doing it. But why does a revolving credit card have to be 30%? Because a lot of people just walk away from it. So they got to make up the money somewhere.
You know where it comes from? Your Supreme Court. They ruled that the Illinois used to have a, boy, Greg, you can test me. We're going to go to hell here in a second, but you can test me. And I think Illinois had a 12% usury rate.
Yeah.
I'm going back like 30 years. When they started doing these credit cards, First National Bank, all those people here in Chicago issued credit cards.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they said, wait a minute, we're gonna send a credit card bill in from Montana or South Carolina where they don't have any usury rates, and we're going to charge 25. And somebody took it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said that was perfectly legal. Where that came from, I have no idea. Because Illinois still has usury rates, probably way less than a credit card rate. And yet, the Supreme Court's ruled, send the bill in from some other place, and it's okay. Where did that come from, Kenny? That's like baseball.
I don't know, because usury rates are, in fact, I thought usury rates were illegal across the board.
No, if it comes from another state, it's fine.
Well, okay, then I guess we should revisit that.
Let's talk about it next week, bud.
All right,
you take care of yourself. Hey, is there any truth that your satellite, your boat, was seen over a Spanish galleon thing trying to get gold at this price?
No, there's no truth to that.
All right,
I'll talk to you next week.
Take care. Let's be futures up 9, Nazareth's up 48. We're going to go right to hell. Hal, how are you, buddy? Listening in on all this?
Yeah, I just got back. Just jumped on.
Yeah, we've been talking legs in market versus interest rates in 1980 and 81, which is interesting. And we're talking about Supreme Court decisions that nobody pays any attention to. So we're talking about the one where even though Illinois or New York might have a usury law, as long as your credit card bill comes from a state that doesn't, the Supreme Court says that's okay. And I don't know where the hell I got that one. It ranks up there with the baseball not being interstate commerce.
Yeah. That's true, yeah. Well, if you look at the abortion pill, in states where I think it's illegal,
I don't think it's illegal anywhere, is it, the abortion pill? Or they're trying to, I know.
Well, I think it's illegal on how people in certain states are getting it, because I think in some states it requires a doctor consultation.
Ah, visit. Okay.
And so what happens is the person who wants one, this is why bans just don't work. I mean, no matter how moral you think the law is, bans just don't work, because what people are doing is they're going to a state that doesn't require a consultation. They're just getting the prescription via the internet.
Okay.
So, that's why bans don't work. That's why making things illegal doesn't work. That's why the drug war, in my opinion, is a complete waste of resources. And it's probably the reason why these drugs have gotten so concentrated, just like, you know, alcohol got really concentrated during Prohibition. I find it interesting that Prohibition required an amendment to the Constitution, but the drug war really just required the President Nixon signing some executive order into law, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I don't think that some of the stuff here, Kenny, the way it continues to move up, and we're going to have him back on because it was a history lesson that probably we should revisit. Our contributor for a long time, Eric May, who wants to come back on, maybe we'll have him next week, said that when he first got out of school, Eric is a very impressive African-American gentleman that teaches creative writing at Columbia College and has written two very nice books about growing up on the South Side. One of them won a big literary award.
Is that Columbia College in Missouri?
No, the one here in Illinois that does all the...
Okay.
It's like the fine arts place.
Yeah, that's right. You're mentioning that. Yeah,
well,
right.
but Eric's first gig out of college was essentially a street reporter in Washington. So talk about getting your teeth cut early. He said he used to cover. You know, he has to come out and talk about it. But I thought he told me 2-3 murders a week. And as soon as crystal meth showed up, it went to like 15.
Yeah.
So some of the stuff that. You know, I think you're probably in my day in college when they had the much weaker marijuana all over the place. Yeah. Nowhere near as strong as this stuff. You could have legalized.
Yeah, I think it's five times stronger.
Yeah, you could have legalized it, and it wouldn't have made any difference. I mean, you would stop people from getting arrested in Texas and going to jail for 20 years. I mean, which was crazy.
Well, I think it was basically legal because there was no laws against smoking it, right?
Oh yeah, there were.
Oh, okay, but they weren't enforced, right?
Well, it depends if they wanted to or not.
In the 50s?
I'm not that old, for God's sake.
Okay.
But when I was in school in the early 70s,
that's after Nixon's drug war, right?
Exactly. Well, I mean, if you pull over, especially in Indiana, if you pulled up in a car when we get in the thing reeked of smoke, you were going in. Illinois, yeah. Maybe not as bad.
I could see that because you're impaired and you're driving a vehicle that could kill people. So in that regard, your actions.
But there's no test for it today. Now it's legal. You walk across. Next time you're in Chicago, I'll walk you across the expressway on a Friday night. You can get high walking across the street.
Tom, I've been in Manhattan and Brooklyn so long that when I mean I smell it everywhere. It's coming out of people's cars. Seriously,
it's coming out of their clothes too, for God's sake. But.
It still means they're driving intoxicated, and they probably can't.
But there's no test for it. There's nobody going to be, unless you get out and fall down on the ground. There's no test for it. They can't prove you're intoxicated. Yeah. It's not like a breath test.
Yeah.
Anyway, his point was this stuff was so addictive, so fast.
Yeah.
That to just say that's okay.
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is. The drug war made those drugs because you had to make them concentrated so you could smuggle them easier and incognito, right? So that's the same thing that happened with Prohibition. You weren't selling beer and wine anymore. You were selling moonshine, 150 proof moonshine, right? Because you had to concentrate it in the trunks of those cars.
You know who was a huge bootlegger, for lack of a better term?
One of the most
famous men, I mean, you're going to say Joe Kennedy, which is probably true. Yeah. Armand Hammer.
Oh wow! Yeah,
he was in the pharmacy business, and they used to make something called tincture of ginger, which evidently was mostly alcohol.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And so they would ship it to the drugstores, and if you poured it in some ginger ale instead of using it as a medicine, you had a highball. he was making like all kinds of dough. Until somebody said, "Oh no, you can't do that anymore." He said, "Okay, you can't do that anymore." Didn't throw him in jail or anything. It was because it was a. But you look at this OxyContin stuff.
Yeah.
These drug companies are, in my opinion, everybody knows this stuff. From what I understand, some of this stuff is so addictive. You give it to monkeys in like 8 hours, they're pumping them.
You shouldn't do drugs.
Yep.
If you do them, you're bad. Because drugs are bad, okay? It's a bad thing to do drugs, so don't be bad. By doing drugs, okay, that'd be bad. The drugs are bad.
God. Isn't that the...
Hey, I love South Park, man. South Park makes fun of everybody.
My buddy Jan, Dr. J's cousin, lives up in... You ever been to Mill Valley?
Mill Valley? Is that the community in Back to the Future?
Well, it's a community right across the Golden
Gate. That's Hill Valley. That's Hill Valley, not Mill Valley,
It's a community right across from the Golden Gate Bridge, essentially. Back from Sausalito. And to say it's a beautiful mountainous spot, and the road to get up there is like one lane, it's not even paved, and all these nice houses up there. Talk about weirdos up there. She had this house, and which of course she thought was haunted, right? She was into all that, and you couldn't really argue with her because she was the most beautiful thing, and bright as all get out. She just had this thing about the other lives going on around her. But two houses down from her is where was it Graham Nash or Crosby that lived in the house for 3 years, did nothing but do drugs and painted all his windows black. That was like right down the block from her. I said, who's the house with the windows painted black? Well, that's David Crosby or Graham, one of those two guys.
I see a clear window and I want to paint it black.
Hey, so what did you think of my, the third time I've asked a question from three learned people? I went back and did some research on the early 80s, and I found out that the CD rates were already down from 16 to almost 12 in the year and a half before the rally started. And when I saw that, I'm just like almost shaking, like, wait a minute. Right now, it's been 18 months, 2 years, where interest rates have gone up, and the market is actually up. Back then, the interest rates were going down, and the market was actually down. It's the almost exact mirror image. Hell, should I be nervous? Is that a trading thing? I don't know if it's a trading thing. I don't think you can pick a day, but it's really I think to me it goes towards human emotion, because I remember those days. You don't want to be in the market, you dummy. You can go right down the block at 15%. Why do you want to be in these stocks? They haven't gone up since 1968, which is true. They hadn't. And now today, stocks go up every day. It doesn't matter where the interest rates are. Just keep buy. It doesn't matter. The Fed's got your back. It's almost the exact mirror image of early 80s.
A CD is just really another kind of bond. And when the yield goes down, that means the price must be high, right?
No, so maybe, CD is what you go and get in the bank.
Yeah, I mean, but it's still essentially a bond, right?
Well, but it's you go and you, yeah. for six
it's
months.
It's not a treasury bond, but it's essentially a bank bond.
Yeah,
right?
But it's a I'm using
it's a bond issued by a bank.
It's the risk free rate.
Yeah, but it's a bond issued by a bank, not government.
Well,
right?
But it's in your passbook. It's not a bond.
Yeah,
it would be a bill anyway if it's only 6 months.
Are you talking about CDs or are you talking about savings account?
No, well, in those days, and even today. You could do one of two things. I remember it. My mom used to do it. You walk in, you had your savings account, or you had your checking account, or you could. A CD was nothing other than a savings account you couldn't touch for 6 months.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think you even got a. I don't know if you got a piece of paper or you got a passbook or what you got, but you couldn't go in there. Yeah. You went in the next day and took it out.
Time deposit. Yeah. That's kind of what a discount bond is, right? Time deposit. You can't pull the money out of the bank.
Well, I mean, any savings account is a time deposit.
Yeah.
In theory, I think they. Boy, I remember it because I think in theory they didn't have to give you the money for 60 days. Yeah. Maybe.
Well, the CD, the way the CD worked back then, I'm not sure because I was like. Really
it worked
young.
The same way today. Worked the same way today. They haven't changed.
Okay, so you don't get a coupon. So it's basically a discount bond, right?
Well.
You put money into it. And you
it's
get
a,
an
it's
X
a it's
amount.
A special account.
Yeah.
So if I walk in today, Lakeside Bank's offering 5.25, 6 month CDs. I walk in with $2,000. I give them $2,000, and they give me a. Now it's probably all electronic, but I'll get another thing in the mail. It'll be my checking account. There'll be a savings account if I had one. Then it'll be this CD, and it'll be an expiration date on it.
Okay, so the interest rate falls, right? So people are used to 16%, and now they're only getting 12%.
Yeah,
I can see people shifting money out of CDs into stocks.
Well, but I'm saying that's the point. They didn't. Stocks were such a drag for so long.
Yeah.
That, I mean, like today. Even if you think that, if with this 10-year rate going up every day, that's not healthy, that's just not what you do. My joke was, I'm trying to make a commercial, it's too long. My joke was, in July of 82, if you would have walked into some, party and you're sitting there sucking on some wine or whatever, said, guess what? I'm cashing in my 13% CD. I'm going to go try and find my mutual fund guy if he's even in business. I'm going to put it in stocks. They'd have pitched you out the front door like a Western movie.
Yeah.
Now, today, if you told everybody, if you went on CNBC today and said, sell your NVIDIA, sell your Apple, sell everything. I'm not advising this. Sell all that crap because guess what? These 10-year rates are going to 12% and put your money in T-bills. The hook would come and it would be like the combination of the hook and the gong show. You'd be off the TV.
Yeah.
And what's
I think that 1980 story is that the inflation, we were definitely in a period of disinflation, declining inflation. So that's one thing different than today. I don't think we're in a period of disinflation. I just don't think we're in a period of disinflation. I mean,
but we were coming down from a way higher number back then.
Yeah, yeah. But what I'm saying is I still think we have lots of inflation in the system. I don't think we're in a disinflation system over the course of a five-year period. Maybe within a year we are, but over the course of 5-6 years, maybe longer, I just don't see it because we're adding $1 trillion in debt to the national debt.
Oh, I'm with you.
Every 100 days.
Well, the message I'm trying to get to here, and it's been hard, is that how much of it is just human mental momentum? And if you walked out today and said, I know, I'm from the future. I came back, I came back from 2 years ahead of us, And I'm from the future. What was the movie? Back to the Future. I'm from the future. I'm going to tell you, in 2026, 10-year rates are going to be 10%, and the S&P is going to be, instead of at 5,200, it's going to be at 3,500. There still would be nobody that would sell. They wouldn't believe me. My point is, people get locked into a habit. And we're talking about, since 1969, the government had, the stock had not moved.
Yeah.
So people were so into not being in the market. I didn't know anybody was in the market.
Yeah.
Everybody was in
seat. I think a lot of that psychology is...
That's what I'm saying. It's
a lot of it's herd mentality, right? Everybody kind of buys the same narratives. They gulp down the narratives that these government statisticians are telling us, and they all accept it without questioning, right? I mean, is anybody really questioning this narrative?
Few of us, we are.
Yeah, there's a few of us are, but I think most people, especially marginally attached investors who maybe aren't political, they don't really get into the weeds, they don't get into the politics, they don't get into the Fed. All they maybe look at is the Fed seemingly restrictive or is it expansionary, right? So I think there's some marginally attached people that are probably in the herd. I think a lot of people are like that. I think institutional investors are probably not.
I would say if you...
every day, probably aren't.
I mean, Audrey and I, you know, on weekends, we hit some of the south side places. I don't usually get into this, but sometimes we go to dinner at people's houses, or people she sold houses to, and we meet them. And I'll tell you this, you know, if you were to say, by the way, you know, sometimes a conversation will turn to price increases and what, God, I just bought this lawnmower and 5 years ago was this, and now it's like way higher. And yeah. I'll say something like, by the way, the statistics say that the prices are up 18% in the last 5 years. What do you think? And they go, that's not enough. everybody will say that. Now, they don't have the ability to say, no, it's really 35 or it's really 40.
Or the interest.
Yeah.
The ability or the interest.
Well, they have the interest, but what are they going to do? They're going to get out of it. Go out in front of the TV or not go to work and get a sandwich sign and start walking up and down Michigan Avenue. I mean, you have zero power. I mean, we do a podcast. A lot of people listen. I don't see anyone from the federal government saying, gee, this Hal and Chief guy, they're talking about this. We better stop lying to people. I don't see them doing that to you.
No. No, they don't. Yeah.
I mean, we got some pretty powerful people out here. And still, so what?
I think a lot of it's just groupthink. And we got to be careful of that groupthink because I think groupthink's taken – I think groupthink took Japan down a rabbit hole. And I think groupthink's taken China down a rabbit hole. But you got all these people who think the same way. This Keynesian mindset of deficit spending, and that's not really true Keynesianism. True Keynesianism is you run a deficit to spur the economy in a recession, which I personally think is dumb, and then you run a surplus during the expansion to pay off the deficit. Well, these people aren't even Keynesians, right? Politically, they're half Keynesians, if you want to put it mildly. I mean, and so I just think it's a train wreck. I mean, you can't deficit spend and have no consequences. Eventually, you know, those bills come due, and I think they're coming due.
Well, the Keynesian, from what I understand, the Keynesian idea of manipulating, the fine-tuning, I'll use the term. That's what the whiz kids used to use, McNamara and those guys, thought you could fine-tune the economy.
Yeah, I don't think you can.
I don't think you can either. Well, and actually...
you can set it in a good position and then leave it, and that's probably the best thing to do.
Actually, at the University of Chicago, they thought... You probably could if you could act fast enough, but Congress could never act fast enough.
Well, yeah, monetary policy, can you really act fast enough? I mean, market participants, investors.
Let's stay on the Keynesian piece. Cause the point, the view of Keynes, which, you know, well, you're a professor, the idea was in a normal society, people, if the government was just flat, normal people are going to save 15-20% a year, right? You know, which is good in the long run because savings equals savings equals investments, right? One of the identities of economics. But if all of a sudden you start getting a little bit of a recession and things slow down, you'd rather not have people saving, you'd rather have them spending it to get you out of the recession. So the idea of Keynes was, okay, if we can go out and we can borrow that money from regular people, we're going to spend all of it, duh, the government, right? So you actually can kick immediate consumption up a little bit just by taking people's savings, making it a government bond, the government going in the deficit a little bit. But you're borrowing money. You're not increasing the money supply. There's a big difference. Now, and then on the other hand is, okay, now the economy's going good again. Guess what? We'll either tax a little more or we'll buy those bonds back or do something, and we'll do it the other way. And then we can take the highs and the lows out of the normal business cycle.
Yeah.
The problem with that is by the time Congress realized that we were in a recession and lowered taxes or raised spending, it was like 2 years later, and the economy was already coming out of it. So they ended up magnifying the problem because they were lowering taxes right when the economy was picking up anyway, or the other way around. So they made it worse because the timing was off. Is that somewhat the history of it?
Yeah, and the problem with the tax cut Keynesian idea is that you lower taxes, you stimulate consumption. The problem with that is businesses want kind of like everything's uncertain. And so they don't want tax rates going up and down at with political whims. I think businesses want maybe a low, fair, permanent tax rate that they can bank on for 15, 20 years so they can make plans. And I think the states that change tax rates more often or that are constantly adjusting them, I don't think they do as well economically as states that just kind of set it and leave it. So I think just the idea of lowering the tax rate and then raising it and lowering it and raising it to, you know, pull the strings on the economy, be the master of puppets of the economy, I think it's just wrongheaded because it leaves businesses, you know, guessing, right?
Well,
they're guessing.
Usually they will spend more in a recession, meaning they're kind of broke, so they got to borrow more. Yeah. But it's really, you know, there's different views kind of on this, but I don't think you can force it so much. I mean, if you're in a recession, you're kind of in one. You got to figure out if it's a business cycle recession or a balance.
This whole idea of mercantilists, industrialists, business owners wanting government to stimulate the economy out of a recession is actually a 300-year-old idea. It was actually mercantilist. The mercantilists of Europe would beg the king to launch some road building projects or devalue their currencies, right? So this is an old idea, and Keynes just, you know, put a new name on it. It used to be called a glut, right? A consumer good glut. Now they call it a recession. Well, the one issue here, the unifying issue here, is these big firms, call them mercantilists, call them industrialists, whatever you want to call them, call them capitalists, whatever you want to call them. They don't want to lower their prices when, you know, unemployment starts to inch up and it seems like the business cycle is turning. They want to lower prices and clear the inventory. They want government to stimulate it so they can keep their prices high. And that has been the history of whatever you want to call it, recession or consumption gloves, right? That's just the history.
But it's always a question, and we've talked about it on the show for God, how long. It's a question of some people can raise prices, some people can't.
Yeah.
And some people have maneuvered themselves. That's why, God, if you'd listened to the show 10 years ago, you know, I said, you know, the worst thing that could happen is we're letting all these companies combine. We're letting all this market power get in the hands of a few people.
Yeah.
If we ever
that's
get
what it, happened in pharmaceuticals.
If we ever get a recession, or if we ever get inflation, it's going to absolutely disembowel the population. And it's happening.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, let's put it this way. If when you have a stock dividend, okay, you don't say only Hal gets two shares for one. Stock dividend, stock split is nothing more than 100% stock dividend. I hope most of the listeners understand that. It means two shares for one. But it doesn't have to be. It could be three shares for two. It could be, you know, five shares for four. Usually it's two shares for one. So let's stick with that one. They don't say, we like Hal as a shareholder. We're giving him two shares for one, but this chief guy we can't stand. We're not giving him his. Essentially, everybody who has a share gets two shares.
Yeah.
So what happens? The price of stock drops by half, and everybody goes on, right? Or if it's three for one, it drops by two-thirds. So, but if these guys wanted to inflate the economy, if they just walked into every single person and said, take your $1 bills, walk over to the Fed and walk out with $2 bills, or 10s for 20s and whatever it is, nobody would do it. Well, what's the point? Everything, all of a sudden, everybody get paid twice as much. Every debt you owed would be twice as much, right? I mean, everything would just adjust like a stock split. But that's not what they want to do.
No, that's not what happens in reality.
No, that's not. Right? What, I mean, that's where some people have sticky stuff.
The people in the lowest part of the income distribution, they get that stock split, if you will, that dollar split last.
Yeah,
right. They get it last.
Well, not to mention the government is the one, if they have income, income tax brackets, and that every they used to be, God, in the Reagan era, not blaming him because he was there when he got there. Reagan era, I'm going to say, hell, there had to be 15 brackets, 12, 15, maybe more. So if somebody is making 15 grand in 1975 and all of a sudden he gets cost of living increases and now he's making 22 grand 7 years later, I'm going to say his tax rate is probably gone from 12% to 20. He's not
even. If you look at the guy at the other end, he's at the top marginal tax bracket, right?
Yeah, so it doesn't really matter to him, but
he's going to stand at top marginal tax bracket, right? So his taxes aren't affected by the inflation.
But right now we're down. I'm no tax guy. Where's my bro when I need him? But I think there's a big change at 50 grand. Don't you pay 20-some percent?
Yeah, I think there's like three brackets now.
We're kind of up to five. You know what?
Okay.
I mean, I'm going to look real quick. I mean, if I can. But now you look at this this $50,000 number. Now that's kind of the number for Obamacare and for a lot of stuff, right? So if you take somebody, federal income tax rates and tax brackets, up to $11,000 you pay 10%, up to $44,000 you pay 12%. Up to 95, you pay 22. So the jump over 44 is a lot. So if you start,
and that's after deductions, right? That's adjusted gross income.
Yeah, taxable income. Yeah. But now if you're here, if you're percolating along at 44, you're paying 12%. Now if you have a period like COVID or whatever the hell the government's doing, and over a period of 5 years, your prices are up 40%. Say if you believe Hal and me. You're up to, what's 40% of 44? It's, let's add 18,000 to it, right? So you're up to 62, 63, correct?
Yeah.
Now, that would be your salary. And now your expenses have gone up the same way. Now, you think you're even. You're not, because now you're paying 22% on the next piece.
And here's the rub. It's exaggerated in a place like New York City, right? It's great for people living in Wyoming, where the cost of living is nothing, right? But for people living in New York City, that's just magnified.
Well, plus if you're talking about insurance and your employer doesn't provide it, I think, again, I'm not an expert on this. I think Obamacare, once you get when it first came out, I think if one of the listeners knows, I think if you made over 50, you were on your own. So now if that's still the case, at 44,000, you were getting help. Over at 62, you're not.
Yeah.
Well, that's a big deal, and that comes out after tax. So say that's another grand a month. Now you're down 12 on insurance, and you're paying more money. Duh, and you can't deduct it.
How much is the penalty for not having health insurance now? Because when it first came out, I was teaching a class.
I don't know how that played out. I know a lot of people don't have insurance.
Yeah, I was talking to my students. My students were saying, I was telling them that, because the penalty's so low, and the insurance has to cover pre-existing conditions. When you get sick, you'll just enroll in it. And I had a female student, said, "Yeah, I paid a penalty last year of $50 because it's cheaper than a $5,000 policy, right?" So if the penalty hasn't gone up, there's still a lot of people uninsured.
Well, I think there are too, or if you have some kind of half-assed plan. Where there are a lot of them, where your deductible is $5,000 or $6,000, you don't have the $5,000 or $6,000. It's like you don't have insurance, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
SP futures up. We got to go to break here. SP futures up 10. NASDAQ futures up 57. Did you guys after break? Did you guys catch any of the eclipse? We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Yeah, we did. Yep.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Low North Bank Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom with Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures now up 11. NASDAQ Futures up 58. We sort of predicted earlier we were not going to do much today because of the CPI number tomorrow, but maybe we are going to do some stuff today. You know, you just never know. That's what's beautiful about the market. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 104 now, 0.6%. FTSE up 15, bucking the trend. That's up 0.2%, and CAC around down 24.3%. So, let's say marginally lower, except for the FTSE. We're in Asia, big rally in the Nikkei, up 426. We're going to have Hal explain to us exactly what these guys are doing over there, because they're kind of putting money into the system with a deficit economy. I don't know how the hell they're even doing it. Maybe he knows. Hang Seng up 95.6% at 16,828. Shanghai up 1. Let's call that one flat. Yesterday, talk about flat. Dow down 11. S&P down 2. NASDAQ actually flat, unchanged. Bonds down 4 basis points, 4.39. The Bund down 5 basis points, 2.39. It's the first time these things are down. They've been up every day to 10-year rates. Japan is unchanged at 0.79. We've got oil up a penny, 86.44. So I guess that's still creeping, but obviously oil is up about $8-9 on average over the last 6 months. Brent up 16 cents, 90.54. Natural gas up 3 cents, 187. RBOB up a penny, 276. We've got gold up 18.20. It was up a little more earlier, but still it's another rally, 23.69. Silver up 29 cents, 28.10. Silver has been the buy the last 3 weeks. Copper up 3 cents, 431. We've got foreign exchange, which I didn't do earlier. 108.7 to the euro, so not much going on there. Same thing with the British pound, 126.9. Everything in dollars a little lower against both those. And we have Bitcoin down 1,000, 70,729, still over 70,000. What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports? Cubs down, up 8 zip, and how's that bullpen doing?
Call the technical term is a disaster.
Yes.
Anyways, 7:34 here in Chicago. We've got 55 degrees right now. Cool, some clouds today. High of 61. Phoenix, 53 degrees, mostly sunny, and a high of 85. Traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose is 33 minutes. Inbound from Lake Cook, 59 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf is 41 minutes. The Ryan from 95th is 28 minutes. And Stevenson, 294 to the Ryan, is 40 minutes. MLB, White Sox lose at Guardians. That was 0-4. Or 0-4. Diamondbacks lose at Rockies. That was 5-7. Cubs lose at Padres 8-9. Bulls, we got home tonight versus the Knicks. That's at 7. Clippers at Suns at 9. And the NCAA tournament concluded last night. UConn wins the second championship in a row, 75-60 against the Boilermakers, and they are champions back to back. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
So, Greg, what do you think? You and Hal together. Why am I so fixated on this? This gold thing. I think this
hell with actually some clutch ref commentary on the women's tournament too on Twitter.
Really?
So, yeah, that was good stuff.
What do you think of this guy's?
I got into the discussion about that last second legal the moving screen call.
I don't know why people were arguing with you. That was clearly a moving screen.
Yeah, and you know, here's the funny thing. It was such a horrible play because the defender Hannah, she switched off Edwards, and she had her left hand in Paige's grill, so it's going to be a difficult jump shot. What Edwards should have done is she should have rolled instead of moving into Marshall on that screen. She should have rolled to the hoop. It was wide open. Paige could have dumped it with an overhead pass to her, you know, winning layup with buzzer sounding.
Instead, she's got her arms up.
Yeah, she had her knee out, she got her arm out, and she's sliding 3 feet into it, and her feet are way beyond shoulder width apart. But they never call that part of the screen.
I'm going to challenge both of you gentlemen in that most of the people arguing against the call were people that think in the last minute, if you denut somebody, it's okay because you don't call anything in the last minute.
You got to call that stuff.
I'm with you.
That official that called that, it wasn't actually her call. She was a trail official. The center official opposite of the lead and the trail, the lead and trail are on the same side. They're over by the benches. The center was looking right at it, and the center did not call it. She let it go. The trail official had to call it. She had been looking at the ball at the corner beyond the three. That's where she was. She should have been down there with the primary defender. But she saw that the center didn't call it, so she came in and called it. She had the cojones to call it. She should be celebrated for calling it.
I'm just going to, without casting any aspersions, I'm just saying, if the two of you spend the next 10 years hanging out in sports bars, you'll find that 45%, that's a chief estimate, of the world out there is convinced you don't make a call in the last minute of play. Because the ref is deciding the game versus the players. I don't agree with that. I'm just saying a lot of people believe that.
Sorry, I lost my audio.
I just said there's a lot of people who think that if you knock somebody's head off on a layoff with 3 seconds left, you don't make the call because you're determining the game. There's a huge undercurrent in sports of that. I don't agree with that at all, because not making the call, you're changing the game, I think.
Yeah.
But I'm saying it's out there.
The players decided the game. Edwards decided the game by moving in to Marshall on that legal screen instead of rolling to the basket and getting a nice little easy layup on a pass from Paige. To win the game, they decided to play. Not the referee.
I'm just saying. Yeah. I was one of the guys. How many people do we have at the desk after the game? About 25 now, in all these games. There were two people on that desk that said you don't make that call in the last minute.
Yeah, I don't agree with that at all.
I don't either. I'm just saying. But that
it was a clear foul. But it wouldn't have decided the game because Paige's shot. They're trying to set up Paige on that little jump shot right on the corner. It was well defended by Hannah. She was on it. She had her left hand in Paige's face. So I don't think she would have made the jump shot anyway.
I don't either. I'm trying to agree with you. I'm saying the people who disagree with you don't disagree with you because of the call itself. They disagree with you the fact that it was late in the game and the call was made.
No, you got to make that call. And I think they're making.
Well, you're a ref, right?
Yeah, they were calling moving screens during that game, so they had precedent to call it. Now, if they weren't calling moving screens and that was the first one they called, then they have a point. The critics have a point. But I think they were calling moving screens during that game, and so I think they were justified in calling it. And, man, that trail official, she should be celebrated, man. She has the cone. You would have done that. Most people would have just left the whistle in their mouth.
You're not going to celebrate if you got money on the other team.
Well, yeah, I know. I mean, yeah. But that call didn't matter because Edwards should have rolled to the basket.
If you're betting on women's sports, you got...
The cool thing was, issues. It was a record viewership on Friday, and then even a higher viewership on Sunday. What was it, 22 million people watched
Well,
it
that
Sunday?
Sunday's game was so intense.
Yeah. Well, you know, Sunday's game, I'm looking at that going, how does South Carolina not win this thing by 50? Because do they have, like, 10 legitimate starters?
Well, they've got the one girl's 6'7", the other one's 6'5", or 6'6". I mean...
And Hannah's only 6'2". She's the post player for Iowa.
Yeah, it's like, you know, a bunch of girls from Iowa just happen to be good basketball players playing against any you know.
It looked like Jimmy Chipwood out there playing against the city team from Indianapolis, right? It was amazing how awesome and deep South Carolina is, man.
You're not going to get a 6'6" girl from Florida or where else she's from to go to Iowa to go to college.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that's going to happen. That's not going to happen. But anyway, the condition those people are in, I mean, it's really something.
Well, I think what happened to Edie last night is the same thing that happened to Caitlin on Sunday. Both players played the entire game, man. I mean, they played the entire game. And Connecticut looks like South Carolina. They're five deep.
Yeah.
Their five players off the bench are as good as their five starters. And that's the same thing with South Carolina. They're deep, and they could shuffle in and out. If Caitlin or Edie come off the bench, they fall behind probably about 10 points, right? So
yeah.
Caitlin and Edie were just dog-ass tired, I think.
Well, you are. And that's what's so strange. I mean, talk about totally changing. I was listening to something on this Quora. Now, who was better, Shaq or Wilt?
Yeah.
And I'm going, you can't even have the conversation, in my opinion. But a lot of people were saying Shaq was actually better. He was this. I mean, Shaq played 32 minutes a game, and Wilt never came out.
Yeah.
So what happens to the 16 minutes when Shaq's resting?
Yeah.
Even if he was a little better, what's the difference? Wilt 1 year played more minutes than there were in the year because he played the overtimes.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing is, when I was in my 20s, I could play 10 basketball games a day and not even be close to being winded. I can't do that today, but in my 20s, in my teens,
well,
late
teens, you end up the it's not the running, because I used to play 3-4 leagues, and the other nights we'd find a gym. It's not the running. If you end up having at every end of the court, if you've got a different guy pushing at you and so forth,
yeah,
it's not like you can't play, but by the fourth quarter, your shot's a little wobbly, especially if you're getting hacked every time you go.
You know what, Tom? I was 6'1", and I had a 33-inch vertical leap. I could get up way above the rim, and my arms are short. But I'd play the post. I'd be like Adrian Dantley, undersized, and I'd go up against guys that were 50 pounds heavier than me and probably 4 inches taller.
I was 6'4", and my vertical leap. I was 6'4". My vertical leap was maybe 2 inches on a good day.
You're like my brother Rod.
What was the movie, White Man's Disease or something? I had it, boy.
White Man Can't Jump?
Oh, can't jump at all, no.
But I could, and I tried to block Rod's shot. He was jumping an inch off the ground. I'm trying to block his shot, and he's spinning off the top of the glass, and I miss it by a half inch, man.
God. Hey, what exactly, I mean, I've seen it, I've looked at it, what exactly is Japan doing? I mean, they were in deficit financing for a while. They bought up a whole lot of the, I don't know if they're getting rid of them or not. I mean, they bought up a whole lot of the ETFs, which, at least in this country, the Fed has never admitted to buying futures. I mean, some people have accused them of it, but I've never seen any proof. They haven't, other than putting money in and doing something. I can tell you a couple stories where they did interfere with the market by the timing of stuff they did, you know, and they did it on purpose. I mean, I know this to be true from years ago. Recently, no, I don't have my inroads anymore of that regard. But what exactly are they doing? They're putting money out there. The money supply isn't growing that much. It's growing some, and they seem to be. Yet their interest rates are kind of going up, not down. But they were so low, you almost can't. If you go from point or zero to 0.7, isn't exactly. I don't even know what that means, Hal. What are they doing? Because the market, all of a sudden, they pumped the market up by like 25%.
Yeah. If you look at their M2, their M2 hasn't really changed. It's still on trend. They're still growing it pretty substantially, right, the money supply. But if you look at their population is declining. In 2000, it was 126 million people, 127 million people. And I think it peaked out at about 128, right? I think it peaked out at 128 million. Around 2010. They're down to 123 million people. So if you look at M2 as a percent of GDP, as a percentage of the population, I think they're probably more inflationary than most people are willing to admit. So I think they're just probably pumping money into the system.
Well, they admitted the other day, now again, I guess I'll accuse our people, they must be trying to give, I won't say trying. They must be giving people a reasonable shake on the numbers, at least, because they claim the 23rd month in a row, the average Japanese citizen, his prices went up higher than his paycheck. So he's actually gone down. He's been in a recession 23 months in a row.
Wow.
I'm going to say here, if we gave a legitimate number to the CPI, I wouldn't be a bit surprised we're not in the same spot.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, here's a really interesting thing, Tom, in terms of recession. We've been talking about that bifurcation in the payroll survey.
Yep.
And the household survey, right? It's getting wider and wider and
actually
wider.
It evened up a little last month.
Overall the trend is continuing to get wider, right? From about a year and a half to 2 years ago. Now here's another thing. All the job gains in the payroll, they're part time. Right?
Yeah, I think
full time jobs are down. I think full time jobs are down 1.1 million. Yeah, over, let's see, 1.8 million jobs have disappeared in the last couple years. And then on top of that, employers with 50 or more full-time employees are still required to provide their full-time employees with health insurance, which is probably about $5,000.
Actually, you're not required to.
I just looked it up, and I think you are, right? If you have 50, more than 50 full-time employers, you're required.
I think you could, if PTI, you know, if we hired 500 people and we didn't give insurance to anybody, I think we're okay. But if we give it to somebody, then we got to include everybody.
Well, I'm
not positive on that. But
I just looked up to the day, the Affordable Care Act says if you have more than 50 full-time employees, you're required to provide them with full-time employees with health insurance.
All right, I'm sure you're probably right. I thought that because think about this.
You got these businesses where inflation is really squeezing their profits, right? My question is, given that, you know, if you have full-time employees of a certain amount and you have to provide them with health insurance, and the fact that we've lost all these full-time jobs and all the job gains are in part-time labor, is it possible that the squeezed businesses are converting full-time jobs to part-time jobs to lower the labor costs?
Well, if you're under, we got to get somebody on who's an expert on it. I think if you're under 32 hours, you don't have to provide it.
Yeah, I'm talking about full-time employees, 40, right?
I think it's 32. You got to get benefits.
Yeah, more than 32 is considered full-time, right?
Yeah.
So more than 32 hours is considered full-time. So our firms that are really feeling the squeeze here, are they converting these full-time jobs where they normally work people 32 hours a week? Are they working them 20 hours a week each?
Yes.
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 Are they doing that to avoid health insurance?
Right? Yes. Benefits, sure.
Yeah. Maybe. So that could explain, since we've had this really incredible inflation in the last few years, I think that could explain the bifurcation.
Well, I mean, you also have a lot of people who've raised their prices 40% and are whining because they gave somebody a 10% raise.
Yeah. And you also have the people who, you know, where inflation captures more and more people in higher and higher tax brackets, especially in New York, where they're really struggling to buy their needs. They can't afford their wants, and so they have to take on a second job or a third job, right? According to a survey that I quoted a couple weeks ago, 46% of employees in America are working a second job.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because they can't afford it, right? They can't afford the inflation.
Well, some people sort of like it that way. I mean, it's to you and me, that's why I have to absolutely, if somebody were to say to me somewhere, geez, Chief, I make $20 an hour, I can't say $800 a week, which in my day used to be able to say because everybody worked 40 hours or more, right? Now it might be, I mean, Andrew, he'll produce the show tomorrow. He works at one of these I guess they're doing pretty good, one of these new chicken nugget joints or something or other. I said, Andrew, how many people in the place work 40 hours? He goes, maybe the manager?
Yeah.
Nobody does, and everybody's got something else. Maybe somebody works there 2 days a week and they bartend two nights a week. It's all over the place. I mean, some of it is just, I won't say cultural, but some of it is just the way a lot of people, because he's looking for, you know, he's a voiceover guy, and he's looking for the job where he ends up on TV someplace, and maybe he will. Yeah. You know, he's a good kid. Yeah. He got a great voice, and I certainly wish the best for him. I mean, you know, obviously I wouldn't have him here if I didn't, but in the meantime, you know, the guy Ryan, who just was the producer, now he's not. We have a new person training today, and he seems like a nice kid, so hopefully that'll work out great. I suspect it will. But now Ryan moved to the suburbs, right? So he loves doing the show, but now he's tending bar on the north side at night till 1:30, driving back to the suburbs. So he's not going to be back here at 5:30 to do the show. So yeah. I mean, wow. So I mean, everybody's got all these little things going. It's not like, oh no, yeah. I do this all day. I mean, it's. I think it's
yeah, there's probably some personal choice in there, but like for my for instance, for me, I work full time for NCANT down in Greensboro. But on Thursday nights, I teach an MBA class in Manhattan, and I would do it if I didn't get paid because I love doing it. But man, I actually need that extra money
sure.
for my family in Brooklyn because Brooklyn is really expensive.
Well, Nancy comes down and does the mortgage stuff every other Monday, and yep. she says it is for people, families looking for mortgages now. It's very average for there to be 2.5 jobs.
Yeah.
Where one of them is, you know, both people are working full time. One of them happens to be an accountant. They're doing taxes during the whole, you know, from December to April on weekends. Or if the, you know, I'm going to say maybe it could be the guy, but maybe the lady does hair on a Saturday somewhere in addition to working during the week or something. I mean, the 2.5 job per family. How much more? How much more blood can you get out of the turnip?
I mean, yeah, you can't. You can. Yeah.
I mean,
it's squeezed pretty bad right now.
Yeah, and the idea that
Robert Reich, he thinks everything's great. I've been tweeting directly at him. He thinks everything's great. Well, if you're working at Cal Berkeley and you're making $400,000 a year, things are great.
If, right? if you're,
and I applauded him for that. I applauded him for that on Twitter.
Well, I remember the University of Chicago, and the professors there I thought were pretty incredible. But even at a young age. You know, I realized that if you're a tenured professor, your view of the time horizon was a hell of a lot different than mine, right?
Yeah.
Just where somebody all of a sudden, well, you know, we'd be in a recession and I'm having trouble getting a job, getting out of there, and don't worry, it's just the normal business cycle. In 4 or 5 years, all will disappear and everything will be all right. And I go, well, that's okay for you. That's all hot for me.
I mean, yeah, a tenured professor at NYU or Columbia, you know, making probably $400,000 a year. Is saying things are great, right?
Yeah, well, they are for him.
Yeah. Or an economist or a statistician for the Fed making $400,000.
Or if you're one of the talking heads on CNBC making quarter mil or whatever they make for doing God knows what, and saying, well, he's got a job, doesn't he? Well, yeah, he's making $15 an hour doing something. By the way, how do you... It just popped into my head. I'm looking at this picture here. These guys that are hooking up the cranes to those containers on top of that ship in Baltimore Harbor... How much you got to pay those guys?
Oh man, well, they're union workers, you know, working in Baltimore. They're paying those guys some serious dough. I mean, those are probably longshoremen, right?
But I mean, you're talking about the thing is wobbling on top of his ship, and you're on a crane.
They're paying them
hooking the thing up.
They're paying them a compensating wage differential too for that, taking on that additional risk from.
Boy, one would hope. One would hope. They claim if they get 140 of the containers off the thing, somehow they figured out. I think it'll be light enough where it can then float and they can get it the hell out of there.
Yeah.
Because right now it's stuck on the bottom.
Was the hole breached at all by ramming into that island?
Whatever it is, they said it's listing. But I don't know if it's listing because the cargo. I think it might be listing because the cargo is shifted. I don't think that it's in danger of sinking.
Yeah.
Like either it's one compartment and the pumps are keeping up with it. They said as soon as they get enough weight off it, it'll pop up.
Yeah, well, that's kind of funny because I remember that takes me back to my Navy years where we ran these damage control drills where we took mattresses and we put them up against the hull and then we put posts on the mattresses to keep the water out and then we turn on the bilge pumps.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was Audrey's dad said it when he was in World War II. He was in a bunch of different islands. He was a guy, I've said this before. He was in the Army. He wasn't in the whatever the engineer battalions. He was in the Army, but his shtick was because he had worked on the Canadian highway, you know, before he went in the Army. But he was a runway guy.
Oh wow! Cool.
So they would, you know, if they're on an island and there's a runway and the, you know, Japan plane would come by and drop a bomb on the runway. I mean, you know, he had a rifle and all that stuff, but they never went out like in the jungle to go looking for people or whatever they did. If they hit the runway, his guys would scurry out, and an hour later, you know, they'd fix the hole in the runway.
Yeah.
But I said, the guy, his name was Elmer, nicest guy. I go, Elmer, when were you most afraid? He goes, that was easy, on the way home. I go, what do you mean on the way home? He goes, we're in this Liberty ship. We're in this storm. The screw's coming out of the water. We're down in the hold. The thing's leaking like a sieve. The pumps are barely keeping up with it. All of a sudden, you see the screw out of the thing. Back in the water, he goes, He goes, all this crap I did over here, I'm going to die on the way home.
Oh, man, I bet when that screw hit the water, man, there's some serious cavitation going on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Plus, they got dumped in, they went up to the Aleutians when they thought the Japanese were going to be. So he went up there to build a runway with these guys. So they come in like a submarine or something in the dark of the night. The captain panics. They're supposed to take him within 30 yards of shore. They drop him off 200 yards of shore. So everybody's in the water. I don't think anybody died, but they make it to sort of land. And now everybody's soaked to the skin with, northern Pacific water. They wouldn't let him light a fire because they thought the Japanese had a submarine out there somewhere. Because all these people got frostbite or something else. And
what part of the year was it? Was winter or summer?
I don't know if it mattered. I think it was winter. Japanese went and grabbed two Aleutian Islands, and then we went up there and grabbed a couple and built a. We had a runway in one of them.
Yeah.
And he was the one who built that runway. ADAC? He was one of the guys building the runway.
Wow.
But he said they dumped him in the water. He said a couple guys are getting exposure. And I said, just you can't light a fire no matter what. Just do the best you can until the sun came up. Like, whatever.
Well, if it's winter, it's not coming up for a long time.
Yeah, it must not have been winter. But still, it was cold enough. Yeah. I mean, the water ever gets warm up there. But, you can tell you some stories about, some.
Well, when we came out of Seattle in 93 on Truxton, my friends and I was in training division, and we hit 30-foot swells. And everybody on the ship except for me, I think, was puking. I had water legs. I never got seasick ever in my life on the ship. But, man, I pretended I was, right, so I could lay in my pit and listen to music. But, man, it was just a river of puke. And,
Laying in your pit.
Like bunk beds tipping over and people getting hurt. It was crazy.
Why did you not, going down the thing, that lurch to the side and whack your head on the thing or something? Everywhere.
Well, the really cool thing is you got really good at going up the stairs, right, the little stairs from deck to deck. If you caught it right, you could just kind of put your hands on the rails and just kind of jump to the next deck, right? I'd practice it. Or if you're on the flight deck and the basketball hoops up, you could easily dunk it.
Well, how many, if you get swells like that, how many, if you get 100 people on board, how many people actually would get injured? It has to be a couple.
Oh, there was probably an injury every day. But I think most people, if they weren't on duty or standing or watch, they're probably in their bed. We call it a pit. They're probably in their pit trying to not get sick, right? But I was fine. I never got sick at all. It was great. I enjoyed it.
Well, you got that little bed as your only spot, right?
Yeah, you have a locker underneath it, so you got some room for some CDs and some clothes, civvy clothes. And you have a stand-up locker like in high school, and that was it.
And then there's the bed, and that's where you had to be. Yeah.
And the bed was 6'2" long and about 2 inches thick. And when we were in the Persian Gulf, we lost one of our distilling plants. We had no air conditioning. That mattress was soaked with sweat, and we couldn't shower for a week and a half, and it smelled like Al Bundy's feet. I mean, it was bad.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, how'd they fix the thing? You have to go back to port?
Oh, I was one of the ones that helped get that distilling plant up and running again. But until then, until we got it up and running, we were missing some spare parts until we got it up and running.
Oh, God.
Yeah, there was no air conditioning on the ship at all.
All right, my deep dive into history in the early 80s, should I be worried that the lag time might be the same this time?
I it's really hard to tell because of the way that monetary policy has changed, right? Now, I mean, they completely set rates differently, the Fed does, right?
I would agree.
Yeah, so it's just a different dynamic.
I don't think people have changed, though. They don't.
I think it's an apples and oranges kind of thing.
I think
now,
it is
people
too.
People themselves, probably, there's probably similar psychology, but the internet is so full of information that I think even the psychology has changed.
Well, it's as they used to say on the trading floor, but not necessarily the internet, but you can't take a drink out of a hydrant. And the internet's kind of the same way. Anyway, but thank you very much. Good luck with all your teachers. We're up 13 now. Nasdaq is up 70, so maybe we are going to do some rallying today. That'd be nice after last week being down. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3900.
3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.